Well, welcome back. We're entering the home furlong here in our discussion on the revised codes of good practice for broad-based black economic empowerment. And Evan, you wanted to pick up on the consulting engineers story.
Yeah, it's, I was very interested that Dion mentioned that, because we had a client who, they're quite a large construction entity. I won't mention their names, but they essentially are a... effectively like a project manager type, like an Oricon type business, and they were looking for, they invested into our enterprise and supply development solution, and they approached us to try and find black engineers, black architects, black project managers, and black quantity surveyors, and they needed them in Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal. And we ran a two-stage process for them. One was essentially, the first stage was to try and get black-owned companies to then indicate whether they fit that criteria. And the second stage was that we ran a process where we embedded this company's supplier take-on process. So if they needed, for example, a tax clearance certificate or formal registration with a particular professional body, we had almost 400 black-owned professional companies respond to the first process, and about 140 went through to the second process. And in the same way as you mentioned, Dion, you know, the response from the company was very positive. They didn't expect to have that sort of level of interest and capacity out there. And so I think it just talks to the fact that we don't realize that, you know, it's 22 years after the advent of democracy. There's been a lot of change in the company. There are a lot of people who've been through varsity, and the country is changing. It may not be changing as quickly as we want, and there's still a lot that we need to do, but there are a lot of businesses out there that are geared towards, or potentially can suit your, you know, suit the needs of companies, and it was a great project for us to be involved in.
A real eye-opener as well, because I agree with you. I think our attitudes need to evolve with the evolution of this young democracy of ours. Dion, enterprise and supply development it's the sexy area, it's the biggest area. 40 out of 107 points, have to mention the points, I'm afraid, but it's split into three here. We've got preferential procurement, we've got supply development, and enterprise development, and it's one that I know is close to your heart. Why do you feel that this is particularly sexy and powerful in terms of the overarching objectives of the code?
Well, I think that, again, you come down to what was the intention. So we need to grow the South African economy. We have rising unemployment. We have very slow economic growth. You can't transform in an environment that doesn't achieve growth. But also, if we look at the trajectory of this country, in order for this country to succeed, we all have a vested interest in making sure that we buy South African, that we employ South African, and that we actively participate in the South African agenda. In the ESD element, really what it now does is it elevates the significance of buying power, and really the importance of procurement and supply chain directors as well in terms of their executive responsibilities. So whereas we say I cannot find a water bottle in South Africa and I import them therefore from alternative countries, I've always done it, we're subject to currency fluctuations, we're subject to issues of certification, there's delays, I have to order that product a year and a half in advance in order to counteract logistics issues. If I start today and in 3 years' time I can develop a local water bottle manufacturer, then I fundamentally manage the risk of currency fluctuations. I buy local in rands. I'm able to get that product delivered to my doorstep in a much shorter period of time. We've got to stop thinking of this as a black thing, in inverted commas, and really start to understand there's a business imperative from buying local, buying small, and increasing the capability and quality of suppliers in our supply chain.
And Leanne, there's another issue here. When you speak to procurement officers, they say, well, my bottom line is price, my bottom line is quality, and my bottom line is reliability. I don't think about any of these other highfalutin strategic issues. Those are my primary concerns. So how do we change that mindset?
I'd like to add in another bottom line over there is I don't want to change to another supplier just in case. I've seen that happen very often, where the entire procurement department is too scared to look for another supplier, look for investments in another supplier, because things were working fine at the moment. What happens if I change to a supplier and something goes wrong? If the nuts and bolts don't work, and then there's a really big problem. So they look at that as well. And how we change it is we have to do something more. I do talk about the points a little bit, and the points at the end of the day, if you don't get those points in a sustainable way, then you're going to have a very negative impact from your customers at the end of the day. So procurement is critically important to the whole scorecard. With discounts and things like that, I've also spoken to many multinationals who have said, you know what, from overseas, we've been told we have to buy from this particular supplier, and there's no changing around that. We have to go with the cheapest, or we have to go with whatever the case may be. That's something that has to change. It isn't a long-term sustainable solution. It's just a matter of time.
Well, ultimately, and I think if you're talking multinationals, you want to have a system that develops such quality and such price competitiveness and everything else that you get into global supply chains using local suppliers. So, you know, it does require a bit of a mind shift. Varushka from Enterprise and Supply Development and its ability to be a strategic lever, what are some important considerations for companies to bear in mind when they approach this? Because it does, I can see the strategic imperative, but I can also see companies saying, well, geez, it's just too difficult. And ultimately, you're asking me to, in some instances, perhaps develop my own competitor.
Sure. No, I think that certainly is a concern that companies have raised. But I think companies that have a very high BE requirement, or whose business is really driven by BE, recognize that they will have to shift the way in which they deal with things, because there are such a large number of points available on the scorecard for procurement from black-owned and black-woman-owned businesses. So procuring from just simply a company with a high BE compliance level is not going to give them as many points. So it's acted also as a driver for ownership transactions, and a refocus as well on the nature of ownership transactions that are done. So companies are, in fact, looking at more innovative solutions then with regards to how to use ownership to, in fact, improve procurement points for themselves.
And there's an opportunity in this, and we've been speaking about opportunities a lot on the panel tonight, Evan, but an opportunity to actually drive optimization through your supply chain if you approach it from that perspective.
Yeah, Michael, so, and just maybe if we can just quickly take a global perspective, if you look at Japan and how big corporates tie up with small corporates, so the Toyotas of the world or whatever, they often use small component manufacturers, and they've got a very strong downstream business that they roll out. So Japan's a very good example of where if you do use smaller suppliers to make components, the entire economy benefits from that. So I think there are many examples globally of which support the notion of supplier development. Certainly from our side at Inyosi, what we recognize is there are three components that most companies look for when they're growing: access to finance, access to markets, and access to skills. Then the codes themselves provide for the ability to make loan funding. So we've got investors that come into our fund that make loan funding, and we've got a preferential procurement portal on which they can buy goods and services from black-owned suppliers. And when they buy from a black-owned supplier, that black-owned supplier can then approach the fund and say, right, I've got a purchase order from XYZ client. It's for 100,000 rand, but I don't have the working capital to go buy all the material, to make up the good, to deliver it, to invoice, and to wait for the invoice. And we will advance them, say 80,000 rand. They will then go and complete the supply, and when it gets paid into a controlled bank account. We take our 80,000 rand back, and we pay over the 20,000 rand to the supply. And effectively what's happened is that our client has invested into the working capital of their supplier. And if you think about how small companies work, grow, if you're a small company, let's say manufacturing tables, and you can take orders of, say, 50,000 rand, and then you've exhausted your working capital. If someone comes along and really likes your tables and places a 250,000 rand or a 500,000 rand order, you can't complete it because you don't have the working capital. And so what happens is those companies can only grow incrementally, and they will take years to get to the point where they can actually do a 500,000 rand order. Whereas in our situation, because we've got the working capital funding, we're in a position, if it's a client of ours and we've got the supplier, we can actually close that loop and allow them to leapfrog what could take them a couple of years to get to those sizes of orders.
That's the ultimate form of bridging finance for small businesses here.
Absolutely.
What is the cost of that, though?
Yeah, we typically try and fund it around prime or just a bit above prime. And what's interesting for me as a portfolio manager, obviously this is a riskier type or area of the market because you're funding into small businesses, etc. But because our clients are more focused on ensuring that they achieve the goals and objectives of the codes, they're not that interested in their returns. In fact, our supplier development is offered on an interest-free basis, so the clients receive no returns. So we, when we're lending to black-owned suppliers, we don't have to charge any risk premium. Mm-hmm. Now, in simple terms, if you're lending to a risky aspect of the market, you typically will load your interest rate because you will know that some of those loans will fail. So you load the interest rates across the portfolio.
Make it even more inaccessible.
Yeah, and that's exactly, it's almost self-fulfilling. So we're in a situation where we can make lower interest rate than what would normally happen in a conventional lending environment. And in that way, and we've been very successful since 2012 when we launched our Enterprise Development Fund and more recently our Supply Development Fund, we've advanced over 220 million rand, and we haven't had a single missed interest or capital repayment.
Well, it's just such a phenomenal track record there. Gary, to bring you in here, and that issue of working capital must be a big stumbling block for your business as well. What do you make of a solution like that?
Well, you see, that's like music to my ears. I mean, it's a journey we're about to embark on. You know, we want to develop our own coffee range. So, you know, our biggest fear is that, you know, a big retailer steps up and says, okay, well, can you supply us across the board? And that's quite a scary situation. But the nice thing about coffee is that it's actually quite an easy decision for a company to switch. You know, if you want, in terms of procurement, to switch a coffee brand is actually quite easy. So we're quite excited about that opportunity. And obviously, with you look at retail, it's a much bigger challenge. But within the corporate environment, it's really coffee is quite an exciting opportunity for us. And we probably can add some other simple products to our range that would be as easy to switch across from a procurement point of view as well.
And it certainly sounds quite scalable, the business model.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, that's, you know, we've really looked at every aspect. So whether we're scaling with coffee kiosks in corporate environments, or whether we're looking to grow our coffee business either locally or exporting, you know, we've looked at all that. So yes, very scalable.
Right, we've got a few minutes left. I'm going to go around the panel and just get your concluding thoughts and remarks on the revised codes and where we are, you know, from a high level.
Sure. You know, leave me with an open question. We could all be in trouble. Look, I think that just my advice to any corporate company, and to conclude my advice, I'd like to give an example. There's an international consumer products manufacturer in South Africa who have done relatively little around BEE. Yesterday we had an aha moment with their global board where what they realized is that their Indian model, they have developed rural Indian women in a Grameer Bank kind of model, and this has increased their sales of products in these informal products in these informal markets by around 400%. If we replicate that model in South Africa and stick a label of BEE on it, we achieve the imperatives of building skills in informal markets, creating small businesses, as well as the commercial return of ensuring that they now have not only the brand loyalty, but also the market share in that informal market. My advice on BEE would be think smart and make sure that there's a commercial return.
Leanne, think smart.
She's just taken half of what I was going to say. but in summary, your BEE decision should make business sense and your business decision should make BEE sense. Implement sustainable solutions so that it's a long-term strategy and not a very quick fix.
Varushka?
Yeah, I agree with Leanne. I think any solution has to be a sustainable one, that attitudes need to appreciate that needs to change and appreciate that the only way in which you can have a successful business in South Africa in a BEE environment is to, in fact, develop solutions that are not just tick box solutions, but that are sustainable ones.
Evan?
Yeah, I think one thing we didn't touch on is that it's very important at a board level that because if you've got procurement people who are concerned that if they make a decision they're going to get wrapped over the knuckles, they need to have the comfort of knowing that the company's lining up behind them. And when they do that, then you can make the decisions that you need for sustainable decisions, which will be carried through regardless of the consequences. Because there will be, when you change things, there will be footfalls, and you need to have the perseverance to go through those.
Yeah, the courage, and that courage comes from being backed by your board. Gary, I'm going to give you the final word.
Okay, mine. I'm going to say, ask me this question in a year's time. You set out to change the world one cup at a time.
I love it.
We're going to do it.
Absolutely love it. Gary, I'm going to be in Cape Town next week, and I think I must stop in at I Love Coffee and have some of your fine coffee. That's all the time we have for tonight. It's been an absolutely enlightening week, certainly for someone who isn't an expert on broad-based black economic empowerment. I learned an awful lot this week, and there's so many strategic drivers here if you actually play your cards right and play it smart rather than looking at the whole thing as a big threat. Evan Jones, Portfolio Manager at Inyosi Enterprise and Supply Development, thanks so much for putting playing a big role in putting this panel together. And to all of my other panelists as well, thank you very much. Dion Kerr, Director of the Association of BBBEE Professionals and the CEO of Siaka Implementation Partners, Leanne Levenstein, the CEO of EconoBEE, and Varushka Pillay, Director Corporate and Commercial at Cliff Decker Hofmeyer. And remember, if you want any of the podcasts, the whole series is up on the website and you can download them at classicfm.co.za. From me, Michael, producer.